We are about to talk with Martin Luther King III, human rights advocate, community activist, and of course the eldest son of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King, who has been spending time in Ferguson, Missouri. And Martin Luther King III, Martin King, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate having the opportunity.
So talk a bit about why you went to Ferguson. And I watched your speech you gave at the church the other night to the family. But talk about why it is that you went there.
I think there are a number of reasons why I went. The first reason I would say is to be supportive of a family that tragically lost a son, a mother and a father and siblings and cousins and aunts and uncles. So having an understanding of what it means to lose a loved one. Of course, when I was 10 years old, my father was gunned down. When I was 11, my uncle mysteriously drowned. When I was 16, my grandmother was killed. My father by a white man, my grandmother by a black man. So understanding the essentials of what violence does to a family and wanting to just be supportive. The second thing is because I felt that a major injustice has been done as it relates to, this young man. The fact of the matter is that while we do not know all of the facts, we know enough to know that there seems to be something wrong, and all across America, we have seen African-American young men not so much always accosted, but certainly targeted by police. And quite frankly, I've been working on racial profiling by police probably for more than 10 years. And in fact, Reverend Sharpton and I called a march back in 2000, which was the 37th anniversary of the March on Washington, to address racial profiling. And we were about to get some legislation in place, and then about less than a year later, September 2011 occurred when 9/11 took place. That incident caused police around our nation and the police culture to be reinforced. We've got a lot of work to do in this country, and that's why I wanted to be there and plan to go back again and again. Whenever I can be of assistance.
Now, I heard you say that to the people of Ferguson who come back again and again. And I know people have asked you this question over and over since this began, but I wanted to ask it as well. I hear your father's voice, and I was there in 1963 in the March on Washington when he spoke. And I was reading some other texts, and the one piece, riots are the language of the unheard. I think it's time for America to wrestle with that again and what that really means.
Well, what that means is that when people are not treated with dignity and respect and even just allowed to be heard, that they, when their backs are pushed up against the wall, they will resort to violence. And that is what Dad was saying, not suggesting that violence is the correct way to address a conflict, but at least helping people to understand why is it that people engage in violence. It's because they feel they have no choice and their voices are not heard, and they feel they're mistreated, disrespected over and over again.
So, where do you think we take, what kind of conversation do you think we're going to have here now in America? What does this tragedy open up for us?
I think what it does is it certainly sets a tone. The real question is, what is America willing to do? It seems that some in the white community are not willing to have a discussion around race because they are nervous about it, whereas African Americans want to have this conversation, but the conversation must lead to tangible action. For example, this is not just for police department, but I think businesses, I think certainly first and foremost police departments, but businesses need, these are three things that I would suggest. We need to be engaged in having sensitivity, human relations, diversity training, because I think every culture is different. And people still do not necessarily understand every culture. They understand what they understand. But if you are not exposed to how people respond and act, you may interpret things that are aggressive that may not be, or something else. So I think the whole society really needs human relations, sensitivity, and diversity training. Now, that would be one of the things that must, I think, that could happen. I think that, you know, corporations do this from time to time, but I don't know that it's done on a consistent basis. So, you know, when we talk about race, I also think we need to define what race or racism is. And I would put this definition as the late Charles King, Dr. Charles King, who was a noted psychologist and for many years did racial sensitivity training. He said, all of us are prejudiced, but our prejudice basically means to prejudge. Our prejudices become racism when we use them to oppress others. And that's what institutional racism is. There are things that corporations can do in one day that impact all African Americans or all of any other ethnic groups because they have the infrastructure and outreach. Now, we can all have racial views. Any one of us can spew out racism, but impacting racism institutionally and across the board, unless you have this infrastructure in place all across our nation, I'm not sure that the average, certainly Black American, it doesn't mean you can't have racial views, but I don't know if we could be characterized as racist. Now, quite frankly, the nation is so divided in some areas, not everywhere, because it does not mean we have not made great strides. We've made phenomenal strides since 50 years ago. But we still have a long way to go, even around the issue of race.
And finally, before you have to go, I was thinking about what you just said when you said you have to see what America is willing to do. It made me think of when your father wrote the letter from a Birmingham jail. And one of the things he wrote about was white moderates can be the greatest threat to our freedom. And he was thinking very deeply about what that would mean. And even though the numbers of people, when you look at the Pew poll, of white America's 33% saying something's deeply wrong here with police repression and relationships with the Black community and police killing is wrong, that there's still a lot of work to do. So how would you translate what you just said, what America's willing to do, with what your father said from the Birmingham jail, and how they might meet as a historical movement meets this present time?
Well, I think my father was challenging specifically the white clergyman as a pastor. He was basically encouraging them to get engaged in a struggle where justice did not exist for people of color. Now, ironically, it shouldn't just be the clergy today. The clergy should certainly be engaged in this struggle, but it really should be business people. It should be community leaders, which it is. But, I mean, you know, I think that the question is, how do you get white America to understand what Black children are going through as it relates to confrontation with police? And how do you get whites to understand Black children, Black young people? Now, this unfortunately, this is not just, it's largely directed toward young people, but it's not just young people. It's Blacks in general. Blacks are targeted all over this country. If you look at Ferguson as an example, which is a microcosm, and you look at the number of Blacks who are targeted by police who were arrested, it's 90% across, not over 90%. Those who were given tickets were over 90%. So my only point is, for that to happen, the police had to target that. And I think if white America understands that we should not be targeting anyone, but we certainly should be enforcing the law across the board whenever laws are broken. And that's why I think sensitivity, human relations, and diversity training is in order. The other thing is community policing. And while this issue is around policing, quite frankly, racism is still in our corporate boardrooms. We need to do more diversity. We need more women and people of color on some of our corporate boards, because our corporate boards are still governed largely by white Americans. and we need women, and we need African-Americans, we need Latinos. So we just have to keep working. If we're willing to keep working, we will change America so that America becomes a nation that it truly says it wants to be. It is a melting pot. And quite frankly, when Americans are focused, the one thing about Americans is we are wonderful people, and that's every ethnic group. Whenever a crisis occurs, Americans come running, rolling up their sleeves. How can I help? That's where we live in crisis. But when the crisis goes away, then we go back to our sidelines. And the reality is how we function in crisis, where we're helping and uplifting and trying to do what we can, is how we maybe need to think about functioning on a consistent basis, which would create, I believe, a better America for all Americans.
Martin King, thank you so much for joining us here on the Mark Steiner Show for your reflections on Ferguson and America. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity.
1989, the number. Another summer. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, because I know you got soul.
Brothers and sisters.
Hey, listen if you're missing, y'all.